whenever we're hiring and building a team, we've got an idea of what we're looking for initially, but the pace of change is constant. So looking for folks who are not going to get locked into one particular role, but are committed to kind of the vision, the team, what we're doing overall. Those are the folks that I'm able to grow with, and that's important when we're making a hiring decision.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Haz Rashid. This is the show where we talk to disruptive executives and founders around what they see uniquely and differently about top talent and how they identify them. I'm very excited for our first-time listeners. Thank you for joining us. For our longtime supporters, we appreciate you. Please subscribe on Spotify or Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a great rating. Today, we are joined by a very special guest. We're joined by Chris Knight. And Chris Knight runs a company called Chris Knight Coaching, and we're going to dive into that. I'm really excited to get into it. Chris, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be here.
I love that, brother. I'm so happy to have you here. Now, you're in Buffalo. Tell me a little bit about the temperature up there right now. What does it look like outside?
Oh, yeah. So today we're in the teens. So it's a little bit nippy out there. When it gets into the high 20s, we're feeling really good.
You're feeling good. That's temperate, right?
Yeah.
And for me,
that's right.
It's an absolute blizzard here in Fort Lauderdale. No, it's like 65 degrees, man. But you can see I'm wearing a sweatshirt. I'm not built for that Buffalo life just yet, brother.
You,
so I'm glad we're doing this on Zoom.
Indeed.
Let's talk about it. So you got into executive coaching a few years ago and started Chris Knight Coaching. This was after years of managing and leading a lot of national nonprofits. When did you realize that this move into executive coaching in your own firm was something you wanted to do? Were you always coaching even in your professional career, even when you didn't have your own practice?
So I got exposed to coaching about 15 years ago. I had the opportunity to get my first executive coach and experience that. And that was really like a light bulb moment for me. I both had insights through that experience that were just completely unavailable to me otherwise. And it planted the seed of, hey, Chris, like maybe this is something you want to do. And then through getting trained and, building my own practice on the side, I just started coaching in every little corner of the workplace. And so I wasn't really managing anymore, wasn't really like leading meetings anymore. I was just sort of like coaching every single place I could. And that just told me, cool, this chapter that you've been running in these companies is coming to a close in this new chapter of Chris Knight Coaching is ready to start. And that was a couple years ago.
Yeah, I love that. And so like, I'm always fascinated by the entrepreneurial journey, and it happens a lot of different ways, right? Sometimes you have people that were, at the beginning they were doing lemonade stands and I've always had kind of that entrepreneurial bent. Some people are kind of forced into it, right? Maybe they lose out on an opportunity and they say that this is the path forward for them. And some people are just wake up at night driven by this idea and leave something kind of reset and static to do something completely new. I'm interested for your journey, right? What was kind of the kind of moment where you decided to do this? And then has it been easier than expected, harder than expected? What's kind of been your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, I probably fall into the third category there. I think this is more of a faith journey for me than anything else. Like this feels like very much of a calling. This is what I'm here to do. And so I'm just trying to obey and pay attention and do my job. Yes, getting into this entrepreneurial space, building a business, growing a practice, growing a movement has been a lot of fun and a lot of learnings, a lot of bumps along the way. One of the things that I think is pretty obvious looking back, but I didn't really expect, is I get to be an expert in the thing that I'm good at. The reason I went full time in this business is the coaching and training, community building. But I have to be a novice at so many other things, right? I have to be a novice at marketing and sales and copywriting and website and, the customer journey and the customer experience and all of that. And so as somebody who was really good at what he did for a really long time, I've gotten really comfortable in that space. I've had to get comfortable being uncomfortable in all these new skills and all these hats that I'm wearing. It's been bumpy, but that's part of the journey I'm really grateful for.
They say chewing on glass and staring out into the abyss. Listen, man, it's not for everybody. I always say being an entrepreneur is not about the mind. A lot of people have ideas. It's not about the heart, right? A lot of people want it. It's about the stomach. It's the ability to deal with the just constant ups and downs and questioning of decisions. And it all falls on you. So it's a big responsibility. So certainly it's like kids, right? The payoff is really great, right? But God, sometimes the ups and downs will just makes you wonder and question life altogether. And so I can certainly appreciate that. One of the things I've noticed about the executive coaches I've worked with, and an executive coach I have in my network, is that always asking questions, right? More so, you know, we think coaching is a lot of like, you know, if I think of like a Bill Parcells, he's like telling you this is what needs to happen type of thing. What is the power of asking questions, and why does a good question be good advice when you're working with somebody like that?
Yeah, advice is really helpful if we are all carbon copy versions of one another. If we've got the same history and the same experiences and the same desires and the same biology, then if you are where I was, and I can give you advice and just tell you the next step along the way. But you know, that's obviously not true. Like, we are billions of individuals. And so really what questions do is they allow two things to happen. They allow the person you're talking to really go into their experience, to go from, well, what do you think I should do, to what am I experiencing? What am I seeing? What can I access? And for the coach, you know, at some point we will offer suggestions, offer things to think about or consider. It's not just all questions. But once we hear you respond to some of these questions, we're going to be able to get out of our own heads and out of our own experiences or the last person we're talking to and get really focused on you. And so any advice that we do offer at that point is going to be much more effective, much more targeted, and much more impactful.
Yeah, what a brilliant framing. I mean, I totally agree with you. A lot of times what I try to think about when somebody is, you know, very diametrically opposed or just has a different belief or value, the thing that I always start to think about is, well, they didn't grow up like me. They haven't had the same experiences like me. They don't have the same mother and father and brother and sister and all the different things that I went through. So it'd be pretty hard for me to expect them to act and think just like me. And when you ask those questions, you can actually unlock a lot, because number one, people love to talk about themselves just in general, right? But also reveal, right, what might be similarities to your own experience and what might be very different. And that way you can target your coaching and your advisement. So I think it's a really, really good point. You mentioned to me also that your coaching centers around the concept of this idea of mental fitness. I'm interested. What do you mean by that? Especially now with everything we see with mental health. I'm somebody that is a big believer in mindset and will. So I'm very interested in this concept of mental fitness. How does that kind of fit into all of those different paradigms?
Yeah. So think about mental fitness going on top of mental health, right? So if we talk about physical fitness, I wouldn't say, okay, I am going to work out 3 times a week with my trainer, but I am bedridden right now. So no, I got to focus on my physical health, and then I can focus on, okay, my ongoing and sustained fitness. And really similar. A lot of folks have done a lot of great work around that mental health, and that's beautiful. And then mental fitness strengthen those mental muscles. And really what allows us to do is move through the ups and downs in life with much more grace and much more ease, right? So life is going to happen. You know this. You talked about just the stomach it takes to do this entrepreneurial journey. Right? We've got ups and downs. We have things that happen to us, things that go our way, don't go our way, major disappointments, major losses. And for many of us, we get stuck in the, this shouldn't have happened, I'm frustrated with this, why me, all of that sort of stuff. And so what mental fitness allows us to do is say, okay, well, realistically, I expect life to happen. I've lived life up until now. I expect the rest of life to go on as it has, with ups and downs. And I know that I've got the ability to respond to life, to make whatever happens a gift and an opportunity for me. And it just means that we're going to have a much more enjoyable life, trust ourselves much more, and be able to see opportunities that we're unable to see if we're just got our gaze focused on the fact that this thing happened that we wish didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the way I like to say about stress and anxiety is that it's like a rocking chair, right? It gives you something to do, but you don't actually end up ever going anywhere. And it can really just kill any forward momentum. Like, I do believe in failing and learning from your failure and thinking through, in similar situations, how can I deal with this and how can I handle this? But there's obviously a law of diminishing returns at a certain point. And dwelling on that, it becomes a manifestation at the end of the day that you just kind of self-fulfilling prophecy that you keep falling back into. And so I'm totally with you in kind of a look forward mentality there. I'm interested because whenever I talk to executive coaches, I'd love to hear like these turnaround stories. Because again, I'll go back to a sports analogy. If I'm wanting to know if you're a good coach in sports, I'm going to look at your record. What's a team mm-hmm. that wasn't doing good. And now all of a sudden they started doing good because you're coaching. Mm-hmm. You can see a lot of that in management too. What about with an individual as an executive coach? Do you have any examples or stories you can tell us of a time where somebody was really struggling in a certain way and you felt like your advisement, your questions helped take them to another level?
Yeah, a bunch. There's one that immediately comes to mind. And this is someone, we'll just call her Jen. We were working together and she was in a position where she was working for a company, a small sort of family-owned company. She was running operations for them. And their deal was that they were essentially grooming her to be CEO, grooming her to take over. And she had put a number of years into this company. And this was her plan. This was her trajectory. And as we were working together, actually in the course of our working together, she learned that they had changed their mind. They weren't even going to sell their company and give her an opportunity to stay with it. They were just going to shut down shop. As you can imagine, it was an incredible blow, right? She had poured so much of herself into this company, into these people, and felt betrayed, felt some frustration with herself for sort of putting so much of her future in the hands of somebody else, all kinds of feelings, grief around the future that she had imagined for herself and she had just seen taken away. And so we did a couple of things. The first thing we got to do is just honor all of those feelings, right? So many of us like to be, okay, yeah, like, let's just turn to the positivity. No, like, we're humans. We have human emotions, right? This frustration, this guilt, this irritation, that's all real. So let's make some space to feel that. What is it teaching us? Process it. And then as she did that, I just asked her one question between sessions. I said, hey, between now and the next time we talk, I want you to take some time, make a list. What are some of the possible gifts and opportunities that are present given what just happened? And most times people hear that question and they're like, dude, I don't know if you just heard what I told you, but this is awful. This is terrible news. But to her credit, she said, okay, cool. I'll take that challenge. And she sat with it and she came back and she was able to really understand what this was leading her to. Mm. And through our work together, she saw, wow, there are so many people calling her up. She's in demand. People want her to come to their shop and do run operations the same way she had done for this small company. She was sort of fending off different offers. That's what our work wound up being later on. It's just like, what do you ultimately say yes to? And she wound up creating her own shop, right, and running operations for a number of different agencies. And so this way, she's still able to stay in the space that she loves. She's able to do the work that she's really fulfilled by, but do it in a much more empowered way and in an ownership way. Like, this is her asset now. This is her company. This is her work that she gets to do and take that lesson she learned from the L, right? We talk about taking L's. I don't think about them as losses. I think about them more as lessons. And then use that to fuel the next phase of her journey, which she's on right now.
That's awesome. What an outstanding story. I'm interested because there's a wide swath of people that absolutely want to advance or need this kind of mental fitness and executive coaching. But I'm interested to look at it from the other perspective. Who are the type of people that maybe shouldn't look into executive coaching? Or maybe who are the people that are hardest to reach, right? What are those behavioral attributes that, you know, that don't actually lead to, like, you've got to have situations where it just didn't go like you hoped. And what were some of the attributes of the people that were in that situation?
Yeah, I think buy-in is key, right? So anybody who is coming to a coaching session and just say, like, wave your magic wand, coach me, like, do the thing you do so I will be better, I will feel better. I talk about coaching as a partnership, right? And really it's a 50-50 partnership. I'm going to show up with the skills in coaching and creating the space and creating the conditions that allow you to engage with what's going on for you in a way that you probably don't have in any other space in your life. Mm. But I'm not you. You are the expert in your own life, and you have to be more invested in your success than I am. Like, I'm going to be invested in your success, but I've got my life to live, right? Like at the end of the day, at the end of our hour together, you go off into your life. And so I think anybody who is struggling, not quite sure where to start, spending time with a good friend, spending time with a family member, spending time with therapy, really just, okay, like getting under what's happening. But then anybody who is at a place where they are doing pretty well and are just looking to unlock the next version of themselves, their performance, their impact, their ease, their joy, that's a great time to work with a coach because you're bought in, you're saying, yes, this is something I'm invested in. And that experience in and of itself is critical to actually having the experience.
Yeah, I think that buy-in is really important. Some other qualities I would think about that would make it difficult to get through is lacking vulnerability, lacking the ability to share and open up, having an ego, which many executives do. So like that can be tough, right? Being defensive on any of the things that you see and call out. I'm sure you can work through those things. They're obviously either paying you because they want you there or they're working with you because they want some sort of better outcome. So hopefully those are things that you can fight through. But I can also see those being qualities that just might make it sometimes very hard, like you're talking to a wall or harder, right?
Well, that's why coaching is expensive, right? And
you gotta want it.
And it ranges, you know, sometimes it can be $100 expensive, sometimes it can be tens of thousands of dollars expensive, right? But really what you want if you're looking for a coach is to feel some sort of like pain in the investment. Like, ooh, it's just a little bit more than I'm comfortable with, a little bit more than I want to lose, for example. And that like investment in yourself goes a long way to overcoming the defensiveness, the lack of vulnerability, the unwillingness to answer questions because you paid for it. You signed up. This is for you. I find anytime somebody is looking to get a deal on coaching or sort of discount coaching or free coaching, that can work sometimes if we're bought in some other ways. But people often ask me, like, why is coaching so expensive? And I think that's the reason. It's an investment in you. And when you make that investment, it pays off in dividends. It's always worth it, in my opinion.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
So you've lived in a lot of really metropolitan areas like Boston and San Francisco. You now, we were talking earlier, you're a transplant in the beautiful city of Buffalo, New York. I've been to New York City 100 times. Never been to Buffalo. Never had a reason to go. Yep. What I know about it is Josh Allen and the Bills, great Buffalo Wings, Niagara Falls. I'm super interested in the professional community out there and just the general community out there. What can you tell us about moving to Buffalo? What that acclimation has been like for you? What do you think about the city?
Oh, so I've been here for 3 years and I love it. We moved here sort of due to circumstance and I thought, okay, we'll be there for a year. We'll figure it out. Within a month, I was like, this is where I want to be. This is the city of good neighbors and everyone in the city actively lives into that. There's never been a place where I've known the names of so many of my neighbors, never been a place where I can engage with people in the street or stores or restaurants. I'm in a place in my life where I'm looking to, yes, do work, and I'm looking to have a high quality of life, and that connection with my community really matters. And so I see myself here for the long term, something I never thought I'd say. When we got married years ago, the deal was we get married in Buffalo and then we'll never have to live there. Right? That was the deal. And I'm so glad that I'm not beholden to what past Chris said. I get to make my own decisions. And the professional community really, really builds on that. And there's a few levels of it, right? There are so many entrepreneurs in the city. And when I talk about entrepreneurs, I think about essentially like just small business owners, like people who are sort of growing their own thing. Sometimes that is a trade, sometimes that is a service, sometimes that's a shop. But there's also a growing startup community here as well. And Buffalo is one of these cities that is increasingly attractive to growth-minded entrepreneurs and growth-minded startups, because, you know, aside from the New York and the San Franciscos, which are established and, you know, high cost of living and all of the things that come with it, Buffalo offers the quality of life that I talked about at the beginning, and the connection and the tight-knit community. And, you know, obviously there's trade-offs, but it's been fun to get connected to different, you know, startups, communities, and, you know, breakfasts and brunches that are held here. And there was just a pitch competition I attended a couple months ago for folks who have come to Buffalo trying to win some funding. It's a pretty cool place to be.
Okay. Well, I want you to hold on to that thought, because we're gonna come back to that in our lightning round. You've lived in Boston, San Francisco, Buffalo. We talked about, I want to go through some of those different cities and talk about, you know, which has the best of what. So we'll come back to that in a little bit.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit of hiring, because that's obviously the theme of the podcast.
Yeah, let's do it.
Throughout your career at the nonprofits.
Yep.
You've got your own consulting organization. I'm sure you've coached and advised people when it comes to building teams and selecting talent.
Yep.
I want to start here. When it comes to the people that you want to work with, or when you were working in your nonprofit career, what was your core hiring philosophy? What was something that was important to you? Is it somebody that's coachable, or is it something completely different?
Yeah. So I'm looking for people who are looking to learn, people who are good team members, and people who are adaptable. Right. And, you know, whenever we're hiring and building a team, we've got an idea of what we're looking for initially, but you know, the pace of change is constant. So looking for folks who are not going to get, you know, locked into one particular role, but are committed to kind of the vision, the team, what we're doing overall. And I know those are the folks that I'm able to grow with, and that's important when we're making a hiring decision.
Yeah, so I'm interested, when you've hired somebody and it hasn't worked out 6 months in.
Yeah.
And I guess every situation is going to be contextual and different, but you're it sounds like coaching and management is something that is a strength of yours, right? So I'm just interested, if somebody's not working out 6 months in, do you look back and say, man, I hired the wrong person? Or is your first thought, I'm not getting enough out of this person, I need to be doing more from a coaching and management perspective, or some combination of both?
Yeah, so I'll just give you an example of a hire that didn't quite work out. And I was thinking a little bit about this, and this is somebody who I'd known, I'd worked with in the organization, and then I hired them to come onto my team to build out a new team. We were starting something fresh, and it just didn't fit for a number of reasons. And a couple things I think about that, Oz. I'm always going to default to, how can I meet this person where they're at? What can I do to put them in a position to be more successful? How can I get clearer with my expectations? I think sometimes that happens to so many of the hiring managers. We just want somebody to like come in and read our mind and just do a good job. I don't have time to, you know, help you do a good job. I just need you to do a good job. But how can I be more explicit? Brené Brown says, like, clear is kind. And then just look at the reality of things, right? So ultimately, whether it was a skill fit, a position fit or not, there were other things that were happening in this person's life that just made it so that it just wasn't working. It wasn't working for her. It wasn't working for the team. It wasn't working for me. And we had to find a path out, right? A transition plan. One of the things I'm most proud of in that experience is, having, again, clear communication, letting them know exactly what was going on, and giving them choice in that transition, right? Because at the end of the day, this is somebody who has worked for the organization for a number of years, put a lot of time and energy into it, and I think deserves that experience. And I think of all of these things as learning experiences. Learning experience for her, learning experience for me, learning experience for the organization again. These L's are not losses, they're learning experiences. And then how can we grow from them? And we did, right? We wound up building a team, growing a team even further from there. And a lot of it came from what we learned we needed that we didn't quite know when we were at the very early stages of getting this team up and running.
I love that. What about, you know, you talked a little bit about some of the qualities that you think are important in terms of adaptability and learning agility, right? What are questions that maybe you like to ask in an interview that you think can either drive some really deep insights or be super, you know, impactful in terms of understanding who the person you're bringing in is?
Yeah. One of the questions I always ask is about someone's past management experience, right? Not their own management experience, but their experience with their past managers, right? What did your managers do that allowed you to be successful? What did your managers do or not do that got in your way? I think that's a beautiful question for me to ask, because there's no value judgment on that. It's just asking somebody to tell you a story. I think so many interview questions are tricky because they're thinking about, okay, like, what does this hiring manager want to hear from me? Like, I don't want to hear from anything from you other than the truth, other than your actual experience. And then that lets me know, is this person looking for an experience for me as a manager that I can actually deliver on, right? And if I can't, or I'm not sure I can, then that prompts a follow-up question. We get to explore that. And if I can, then okay, cool. This is somebody that I think we can partner with. I'm ultimately looking for the right fit for them and for me. I think, unfortunately, people get into these searches and they get this idea of what a job will be and the experience, and they sort of paint this whole picture based on a job description. And then they get deeply committed to it. Absolutely, this is the one, this is the dream job. It may or may not be. I mean, one of my jobs as a hiring manager is to help this person really understand what the job is, really understand what it's like working with me, so that we can see ultimately, even though we both hope that it's going to be a good fit, see if it ultimately will, because that's ultimately what matters.
Yeah, a very similar question that I like to ask, maybe a little bit of a different flavor, is tell me, you know, I want you to think about the best manager you've ever had. And if somebody specific comes to mind, tell me about them. But if it's some sort of combination of different managers and their qualities, tell me what those qualities are. And much to your point, it's exactly the same thing. Number one, it usually makes people smile. It usually makes them think about that person. Now, if they're telling me that's their current manager, man, I'm a little bit worried, because that's like actually the number one thing that's toughest to pull away from someone who's a great manager. People will leave comp, they'll leave title, they'll leave company, they'll leave location. But leaving a great manager is very, very rare. But also, to your point, what are the qualities of that manager? And then being honest and self-aware about my management style, where are my strengths, right? Yeah. And then understanding how is this person going to potentially do in this role work with me? So I think it's a really, really astute observation and question by you that can really lead to some great insights on the right person. What about from a memorable interview experience? Maybe it's one where you are interviewing. I don't know if it's a bad one, a funny one, a great one. Any come to mind when I ask you that?
Yeah. The interview experiences that I love are ones where we are hiring for multiple roles, right? Because then it gets to be sort of a project. And I think that's the thing that's most important in hiring. And when I am hiring, and in my sort of past life, when I was running some of these searches, one of the things that you could expect from me is a project plan, right? I think so many people treat hiring like a side gig. Like, I'll get to it when I've got some time.
I was just saying this on two calls earlier today. Absolutely. It's like a burden, right? Almost.
Yes, right. And it's insane, right? So there's this person that is critical to your team that you need to get integrated as quickly as possible, that you are going to spend a ton of money on, not to mention a ton of time on, and you're just trying to do it on the side. Right. So I think that's one thing that gets in the way. The other thing that gets in the way is just unrealistic timeframes. People will say, okay, well, I want my first round in 2 weeks, and then second round the week after, and then the final round the week after that. Okay, cool. So how does that line up with your calendar? Do you have time to interview all those folks? How does that line up with the team? Who do you need to bring in and get buy-in as part of the interview process? What about your recruiter? Right. So project plans, reasonable timelines. And that all goes back to the searches that I love, is when we've got multiple roles we're hiring for. It has to be a project. Nobody can argue with me at this. And then we get to bring lots of people into the process, and it becomes a team endeavor. And one of the reasons I love multiple roles is you just get to say yes to multiple people. And when you have something like that, you have an experience where so many of the people on the team get to work with somebody that they wanted to work with, right? When you've got just one role and, you know, 70% of your team like them, 30% of the team, they were your second or third choice, and they're sort of coming in at a slight disadvantage. If you've just got three people that are coming in all at once, that was somebody's first choice for all of them. And it just makes for a fun experience, I think a team bonding experience as we're going through the hiring process. And makes the integration process much more effective.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, hiring managers, so everybody listening out there, treat hiring like an opportunity. If you go to the gym and you are MFing everything and I don't want to do this, hey, good luck getting the gains you want, getting the six pack you want, getting the endurance you want. If you go to a networking event saying, I just don't want to do this, I don't know why I'm here, good luck getting anything out of value out of that, right? Yep. You go and you attack hiring with this idea that I can bring in somebody amazing to my team. This is worth my time. It's worth doing well. Getting it wrong is so costly and disastrous. I'm going to be in the moment. I'm going to be engaged. And again, I'm going to treat this with a mindset of I'm excited. And hopefully you've got great candidates in front of you that make you feel that way. And eventually you make a great hire. And I think that mindset flip is just a really important thing. Rather than looking at hiring as taking away from your day job, look at your day job as hiring well. And that will ultimately, if you do that and you build a great team, it'll very much alter the description of what you do and the tasks that you do. And usually in a very, very positive way. So I think it's a great
thing. I love it. I love it. I mean, for me, that comes back to this concept of mental fitness too, because one of the reasons we've deprioritized it is we've got so much on our plates, right? And prioritizing is a really hard thing to do. You ask people, what are your priorities? Well, what is your priority? They'll list you like 5-7 things. That's not, those aren't priorities. It's just a list of stuff you want to get done. And so, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, you just got to prioritize hiring. It's something else to say, okay, well, why is it hard to prioritize hiring, right? And what do you feel like you are losing or leaving on the table? Or how do you feel like you're letting other people down, your teammates down, when you prioritize this over something else? Because you're going to have to push back a timeline or reset expectations with somebody else. And that's hard to do. And the more we've got our own mental fitness and our ability to navigate these tricky situations, then we're able to do what we want to do, which is actually prioritize the hiring experience.
Okay, love that. I want you to put on two different hats right now. What is frustrating about the hiring experience? Because once on the candidate side, we've all been a candidate before, and then on the management side, what are things that maybe if you could snap your fingers and change them on either side, what would it be?
So a frustrating thing on the hiring side and a frustrating thing on the candidate side. I mean, first thing on the candidate side, realistic timeframes would be extraordinarily helpful, right? And I don't really care if you say, we will know an answer in 3 months. I don't really care what your answer is. It doesn't have to be right away, next week, the week after that, but just properly setting my expectations around what my experience will be and when I will be able to kind of know how this is unfolding. That again goes back to planning and having a project plan and everything else to be able to communicate that. But that'd be the one thing I'd want on the candidate side. On the hiring side, I would love for folks to really approach this much more like dating, you know, much more like, I am thrilled about the idea of working together, and I'm here just like you to see if this is a good fit. I think there are so many people who are coming in and trying to sell themselves, and I get it. The job market is tough. You want to get a job. You want to finish this process. You want to just get a paycheck. I understand. But really showing up, knowing your value, knowing that if this is the right fit, it will be the right thing. And if it's not the right fit, you want to know that too. You really do. You want to know it now. You don't want to know it in 3 months. We talk about it, the cost on the hiring side or on the employer side. There's a cost on the candidate side as well. And so that's what I'd love to change.
Great stuff, from that perspective. Let's take a little bit of day in the life. I'm interested. Have you read a good book recently that you'd recommend for our listeners, or maybe some great content you saw on TV or the web?
Yeah. Recently, well, I've got one right here. This is Always by My Side.
Four Agreements. Great book.
If you're familiar with this one,
I think I might have it. Oh my goodness. Maybe.
Do you?
Yeah.
Let me see if I scan.
Yeah, I don't know. This isn't the full collection here. This is some selected ones, but I know I got it at home. So.
Yep. And then Dare to Lead is one that I've been thumbing through again as well. That's a Brené Brown classic.
Brené Brown.
Really just focuses on leadership in a deeply human-centered, we talked about vulnerability, vulnerable way. We need more of that in the world.
Love that. What's some advice that maybe, before we get to our speed round, it's my last one. What is some advice maybe you'd give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then but that you know now?
Man, 20-year-old Chris was really trying to be perfect, no doubt about it. That dude wanted to impress everybody, wanted to do the right thing, was looking to figure out what the right thing was, and was deeply stressed out as a result, because the fact of the matter is, it depends. And so I think if I was able to sit down with that guy, I'll probably just say, listen, man, you're doing a good job. There's no wrong turns here. Your only job is to be you and just keep moving forward, bro.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
I like that. Don't be too perfect. Don't be too fine, right? It's okay to mess up. It's okay to have failures. It's okay to keep advancing beyond that. I love that. All right, here's what we're going to do. You told me that you lived in Boston, San Francisco, and Buffalo, okay? I'm going to ask you to rank them based on the question I give, right? Let's start here. Best nightlife?
San Francisco.
And then Boston, and then Buffalo?
I think that's fair. Nightlife guy here, this stage in my life.
Yeah, I'm with you. We all have different things at different times, but I gotta start there. Yeah. Best sports scene.
I mean, clearly, in a way, Boston. I'm sorry, everybody. I know I'm here, but yes, go Pats. And Boston, Buffalo, San Francisco.
Okay. Best food scene.
I mean, San Francisco is a world-class city. So I got to give it to San Francisco, Boston after that. Buffalo's got some great spots, but a little bit of a smaller market.
Yeah. Easiest to get around the city.
You know what? I'm going to give it to San Francisco, honestly, a beautifully set up city, 7x7, nice grid. Buffalo after that. And then, you know, Boston is just based on cow path. It's a mess.
That's hilarious. And then last one, best people that you vibe with the most.
Dude, you're putting me on the spot here. Listen, I will say I've got some wonderful relationships, wonderful connections in each one of those cities. I would say culturally, the City of Good Neighbors here in Buffalo is an experience communally like I've never had before. But, you know, you can't miss.
Every place is what you make of it, right? All right, last one. Yeah, Buffalo, exactly. Some love. What, if I'm coming up to Buffalo to visit and I'm bringing my park, I'm bringing my scarf, where are you taking me to get a buffalo wing?
Okay. So it's an excellent question. I got two answers for you. There's the classic Anchor Bar, Duff's, Gabriel's Gate. Like, what's the spot you got to go? Of the three, if you're here traveling on your own, downtown Buffalo, go to Gabriel's Gate. It will not steer you wrong. Incredible, incredible wings. But here's the thing about Buffalo. You can go to pretty much any place and get amazing wings. It's just like one of those spots. If you don't have good wings in Buffalo, you're out of business. So what's the point? And so if you were coming here to visit me and we were going somewhere, I'm going to take you to a deep cut. We're going to go to 9/11 Tavern. And this is a place where you cannot make reservations. They don't take parties bigger than six, cash only. I was there recently, a few months ago, actually, with a friend before a softball game. Just
beautiful.
Perhaps.
Are you like traditional hot sauce, or is there a special sauce, or?
Oh yeah, man. Just like, you know, medium spice, maybe you can go, hot. But you know, definitely get that classic, you know, Frank's hot flavor. I think if you're doing a Buffalo taste test, that's got to be it. You can go beyond that, you know, if you're just having a, you know, pizza party or, you know, for the game or that sort of thing. But
I love it.
Yeah, you got to have it.
I love it. I knew right when you said cash only that was going to be the place. All right, last one. Cash I don't want to end on a divisive note, but I'm going to do it. Ranch or blue cheese?
Oh, dude. Blue cheese all day.
I know that makes me a Fugazi, but I'm a ranch guy. I gotta have it in it. There's just too much. It's just too much if I have the blue cheese on it. It overpowers wing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, if you come to Buffalo, please, I pray, do not request.
Do not ask ranch. All right, I'll go with you. I'll get a little bottle of Hidden Valley, and I'll
there it is. There it is. But that's why ranch exists, right?
You know, exactly. You can take it on the go. I actually know somebody that carried ranch in her purse. All right, brother. I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on. This was a great episode. Really appreciate you. Excited to come visit you in Buffalo. Thanks for sharing everything you did. Have a great one, Chris.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, buddy. See you.